What's up, Hyperfast Nation? On this episode of the show, we are bringing you another speaker, or pair of speakers, I should say, from the 2024 Hyperfast Agent Summit. On this episode, multi-billion dollar real estate agent Carrie Scholl and top lender Carl Svensson are teaming up to teach you how to generate and close more deals. Stand by for this episode of the Hyperfast Show.
You want to manage expectations all the way through the transaction so that way you can avoid disappointment and people are satisfied and you're going to get referrals.
Yes. So when to set expectations?
You're going to do it up front in the first meeting with the client. In that first meeting, we're going to go through, you know, how our team does it with Carrie's team. Her reality check analysis is going to come from the information. We're going to give you four data points in the 5 minutes that were in your buyer presentation when you first meet with the client. And you can't really do the reality check without bringing us in to give you those four data points.
Can I ask them one question? How many of you guys, when he says reality check, know what he's talking about? Raise your hands high so I get a gauge. Okay, most of you. If you don't, find me afterwards.
Can I take a
guess? Yes.
Can I bring you in? So they know what they can really afford?
Or so kind of bringing them back to the world? It's using the pieces of data that we're going to talk about to set their expectations appropriately using market data in the initial meeting. So I have like a whole thought process around why that's so important. And if you haven't been exposed to it and you're here, I'm happy to gift you my training on that so you can use it to do more business, because that's why you guys are here and we want you to get a lot of value out of it.
Because if you have a buyer in that initial meeting that everything you're showing them is an $800,000 home and they want minimum money down with a $3,000 payment, it's going to be really hard to reel them back into a $500,000 home and still get them everything that they're looking for, right? So you want to set expectations up front. That way, you're going to be able to better align yourself with what they're looking for, and then you're going to avoid that disappointment and ultimately, you know, get the buyer from point A to point B, which is closing.
Yes.
When showing houses, you know, part of that reality check, which we're going to go over, is helping them in, you know, strategize on how they're going to still get what they want. What I mean is, if they need to increase their monthly budget by a couple $100s or change what they're looking for in the house, Carrie trains all the time about finding out what their purpose is with what they're looking for in the home. You know, so you're going to be able to better close the buyer when you're showing them houses if you already know that you're going to take them to a house that's going to cost them a little bit more every month, right? But in that, when you're writing the contract, you got to get numbers from your lender partner before you write the contract, because there's nothing worse than getting a contract you can't close. And if I've seen it many times in my career where a contract just shows up in my inbox as a lender. First feeling is excitement. It's like, oh, great, we have a contract. But then sometimes that contract doesn't close because the buyer signed a contract without knowing what the numbers are. And then they're squeamish because it was not what they were expecting, right? So mismanaged expectations because we didn't work together as a team to get the buyer on board with what the financing looked like before getting that contract signed and ratified. And I guess I'll also say, you know, as a lender, like, yeah, the buyers are our client, but really we work for you guys. The agents are our client, you know, so put us to work so that way we can, you know, help you guys close at a higher rate and just have more success and not waste your time, you know, because if you're showing them a house that's a little bit more expensive and we didn't get to huddle up with them, you might have just showed them a house for no reason. After ratification, obviously, when you get a contract, the work's not done. You know, they still need to submit some loan documents. There's stuff that they have to do to be able to get their loan cleared for closing. You know, so obviously, you know, there's a lot more work that has to be done in setting those expectations of what comes after they sign the contract, you know, with their earnest money and, you know, what their responsibilities are and their due diligence is important for you to be able to have a smooth transaction after you get the contract accepted.
Definitely. Okay, so I have a philosophy here about the very beginning of the process. So can I do the clicker?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not used to someone else controlling the clicker. I'm like, go, go. Okay, so an online lead versus SOI opportunity. How many of you guys think it's easier to close an online lead than SOI?
So
couple of you do.
I didn't used to, but since working with you, I actually do.
You think it is? Yeah. Okay. And how many of you think it's easier to close SOI? Okay. The majority of you. So here's my perspective. Both are actually fairly easy to close when you follow the right process. But agents, how many of you guys, when you hear the word process, you go, oh, yes, please. Like none of you. Like how many of you actually like process? Be proud. Okay. So, okay. 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 We've won you over. That's right. That's right. Okay. So my philosophy here is a lot of people make a big mistake when they're speaking to an online lead, because more of us have done business with SOI and referrals typically than online leads. How many of you primarily do the most business with your SOI? Raise your hands. And how many of you with online leads? Okay. Fascinating. So my perspective is that a lot of us as real estate agents have been trained by coaches, mentors, watching what other real estate agents are doing. And what we learn is upfront, we're talking to a person in the initial conversation. And what do we say to them?
Have you been pre-approved? Some of you are like, oh, hell no, Magley, I saw that. Okay, so my feeling here is that a lot of us ask that. And what it does to someone that we don't know at all, if we're having an initial conversation and you came through an online lead and I ask you that, so have you been pre-approved? For a lot of people, it's a turnoff. Why do you guys think that is? You don't know them. It's invasive. It makes it feel like you're sizing them up to decide if you want to work with them. And it's all about the money instead of the relationship. That's my philosophy. And some people don't agree with me, but here's what I would say. You can accomplish the same goal by talking about comfort zone. So have you talked to anyone yet to understand your monthly comfort zone and what that means in terms of a price point that you can afford in a house? You're asking the same question. It's just perceived differently because you're presenting in a way that's valuable to the client. Does that make sense? So I think upfront for our team, we don't ask either of these questions until after we book the appointment. If we're talking to an online lead, we book the appointment and then we have a statement. Oh, by the way. And then you ask about their comfort zone. Does that make sense? So to close more deals, my thinking here is avoid asking about pre-approval upfront. Okay, the buyer consult. Look, I need to pass the mic. Go ahead.
Oh, I do like the regular mic better. In the buyer consultation, we're going to come in for only 5 minutes. And we're going to get into this later, but you're going to have a lot of information you're going to have to go over with your buyer. You have to be able to be on a time crunch and get all your stuff done. So your lender partner needs to be quick. And Carrie's going to share with you here through this presentation how you're going to be able to help your lender be very quick on our portion when we come in.
So my background is in new home sales. A lot of you know that. So if I didn't get the buyer fully vetted up front, I was spending an entire Saturday afternoon picking out cabinets and tile and carpet textures and the color. And I did not want to do that without understanding their front and back end ratios, their qualification, making sure they were comfortable with the payment, all of those things. But what I realized when I got in the resale side of the business is to scale my business, which some of you asked this with creating teams, to create a scalable business, I had to have a process that protected agents on my team that didn't have the same background that I did. Does that make sense? And so for all of you, how many of you guys are really comfortable running back end ratios and calculating what someone's payment's gonna be in a moment? There's a few of you, but the majority of you, I would argue that a lender could do it faster. But the reason you don't involve the lender in the buyer consult is you don't have the right process to protect the time, right? Because you're worried. If you have a lender that's chatty, anybody have a chatty partner? Chatty partners kill the conversation and they don't allow you to get to the end. So you've set all the right expectations and you can close. Am I right? Okay. So I believe you should include your lender partner with every single buyer consultation. How many of you do that today? Raise your hands. Three of you. Okay. Okay, four. Sam, you're a late hand raiser there. Were you like trying to think through it? Sometimes. Okay. So Carl's watched this work. And when we talked about it up front, were you used to this idea with any other team you'd ever worked with?
No. Before joining Carrie's team, I was in the business a little over 5 years, and nobody else did it Carrie's way, which actually completely changed the way that I was thinking about the whole process. And the conversion is much higher.
Yeah. And you guys who had a devastating deal that stood here and apologized to each other, you would like to avoid that in the future. Am I right? Okay. So I'm going to teach you a few things that I believe are important to set you up for success in making sure you protect the relationship and have a trusted partner in that seat instead of a random dude that's a cousin's friend's uncle. Okay. That often doesn't do a full application up front, doesn't analyze the data correctly. And usually some of these lenders, they're brand new, right? So they just don't know what they're doing. So you guys have heard, we have a three-part buyer presentation. I'm going to go a little deeper into some of the conversion strategies, which you asked me for later. But on this, this is step one of our buyer process, okay? Anybody who wants this document, you are going to get a copy of it if you want it. But here's the thing to consider. How many of you guys ask detailed information about your client's finances in the initial meeting? Okay, good. 10 of you, right? So my thing is, in order for me to set Carl up for success, I have to ask about this. And some of you think, tell me, be brave, who thinks it's none of their business? Okay, a few of you. My philosophy here is, they're asking us to be their guide in one of the largest financial decisions they're going to make in their life. It is our business. We have to understand their liquidity in order to give them advice about how to strategize and structure their offer, right? If you don't know how much they have in savings, how can you make a recommendation on how they structure an appraisal contingency? And if you're not at the point where you have that information up front, when they start to get closer towards buying a house, it makes them very nervous. When you come from the place of an educator and a consultant up front, they're gonna open up to you and it's gonna change the game. So I think a lot of the resistance, we actually had a person who started our training that said like, I will not do this. And we had to move him off the team. I'm so serious about it because for me, it's a part of our responsibility to make sure that we have the details to protect the other side, to protect the client when we represent their side. Does this make sense? So, absolutely. It's on the form. So if you look at the full form, we're asking for all of their debt as well. Yep.
I always like to, I don't know if that's an offered suggestion, but I do
before I get to the financial part, because it is delicate for some people, I go, okay, now for this part of my analysis, I just want to ask some personal financial questions. Is that okay with you? It's going to help me understand the bigger picture, you know, and then usually I feel like that opens people up.
Absolutely. What you're doing is just enrolling them in how it's going to help them. So once in a while, someone will say, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. It's even more important that you ask if they say that. Because why would they feel uncomfortable with it? Right. Bankruptcy, foreclosure. Yeah. But they have to disclose it to the lender. So if they view you as a trusted partner, I've dealt with a lot of lawyers too, and I've always been able to enroll them and equipping me with the information I need to give them good advice, right? Here I come. Oh.
I know I'm in the corner. So you can't see.
I didn't see your hand. It was hidden by my...
So my real question is, I don't have an issue with buyers when it comes to their finances if I don't know them. But if it is like family... Sometimes they kind of want to keep that on the hush. So how do you get around that situation?
So if it were that situation, I would conference in Carl, but I would text him in advance because anytime you deviate from process to set your partner up for success, you have to communicate it. So I would say, hey, ironically, I just queued a conversation for one of his team members this weekend, and it was with my in-laws, with Dan's parents. That's a situation where I had asked some approximate information, but there were more details that needed to be discovered in order to figure out the solution. I'm actually going to talk about that one later because it was really challenging. So in that situation, I felt like they wouldn't be comfortable with me asking all of those details, and I let the lender do it instead. And I wasn't on the phone for it. Typically, I would stay on the phone. In that case, I introduced them and let them have the conversation without me. Okay? Okay. What was yours? No. Yeah. So I recommend that you do it in advance of calling the lender because I want it to be able to go very quickly when you get the lender on the phone. Okay. So I'm gonna show you how I cue that conversation. You guys want me to role play it, how I would say it to the client. Okay. Because this is going to save a lot of deals. And some of you, if they say, oh, we're already working with the lender, what do you guys say? Okay, great. Good job getting pre-approved. Because you just feel uncomfortable approaching the idea that they might want to consider working with someone that you trust. Are you guys with me? Do some of you agree with that? Now, due to the fact that I lost out on tons of SOI business early on, I learned that lesson intimate and hard up front. And it was devastating, right? I would watch friends that loved me buy with another agent. And I'm like, what just happened? One of them bought with an agent in my office that their parents found on Google. She sold like 2 homes a year. Oh, but, and they were pissed because they got like a picture frame for the gift. I'm like, anyway, so back to today and this message. So this slide is in our buyer presentation. Most of you have seen our buyer presentation. And so when I get to this slide, I simply ask the client, will you be the client for me? Okay, perfect. So Chris, do you know the difference between pre-qualification and pre-approval?
No, what is it?
Okay, so the pre-qualification is actually just a real quick conversation. Typically takes 5 to 7 minutes. And we go over all the information that we talked about your finances up front. And we know exactly what your qualification is and more importantly, what your comfort zone is. So I have a conversation scheduled for my lender, Carl, to jump on with us. Now, there's no obligation to use him, but he's going to give us the data so we can do the reality check analysis that I mentioned earlier. We set an agenda up front, and you'll be armed with all of the financial information you need to get a full pre-approval when the time is right. Does that make sense? Okay, perfect. Did I say, are you comfortable talking to my lender? No. When I present it that way, if he says, oh, I already have a lender. Okay. Absolutely willing to have a conversation about the lender. I did schedule this conversation today because I want to make sure that we have aligned expectations around your comfort zone. And so Carl's ready and I'm going to pop him on the phone now. It's not like a, are you okay with this? Like people dance around it. I need data so I can provide service.
You're controlling the process too by doing this, by not asking. You're controlling, and this is the next part of our process.
This is what we're doing next to prepare you for success. Okay, so then when they get on the phone, here's the other piece of it. If I want Carl to be on and off the conversation in 5 minutes, and I just say, oh, hey, Carl, I want to introduce you to my client, Chris. Is he set up for success, people? No, not at all, because then he's got to go through all of the details. So instead, I'm going to say, hey, Carl, I have my client, Chris, here, and we've been going through all of the details of his situation. Can I run through those with you quickly now? Yes. Okay. Annual income is this. I just go through all of the details. Now, Chris shared with me that his comfort zone is around $5,000 a month. Right, Chris? Perfect.
Great, Chris. Pleasure connecting with you. Based on everything Carrie shared with me today, you're going to get approved with your 5% down payment for maximum purchase price around $1 million. Notice I said purchase price first, but since Gary shared with me that you want a $5,000 monthly payment, I know that you don't want a million, because at a million, your monthly payment's going to be close to around $7,500. To get you a $5,000 monthly payment, you're going to want to find a house closer to around $725.
Okay, so Carl just knows the data so clean. But here's where we fall. There's four pieces of data that you need to be able to advise the client, right? So let's talk about what they are. One, the monthly comfort zone has to come from you when you call the lender. You should have already had that conversation. And if you use that little form, you know that. Because most clients, do they think of it in terms of the monthly payment, or do they think of it in terms of the purchase price? Absolutely the monthly payment. Even if they're buying for the fifth time or the seventh time, that's how they think about it, because that impacts their daily budget. Does that make sense? So you always want to talk to the client. It is my philosophy at any point in the process, always, even if you're asking them, hey, there's an escalation we're going to have to make in order to potentially win this house, another buyer bid 50,000 over, you want to break that down into what it means in terms of the monthly payment, not the $50,000. Does that make sense to you guys? Okay, super important. So review all of the financial data provided by the client upfront. Just like I said, when you first call Carl, because if you don't do that and he has to ask all those questions again, how do you think that makes the client feel? It's weird. You just went through it all, and then you put them on the phone with somebody who goes through it all.
How much do you pay doing that when you push on the phone lines and then they ask you?
Oh, it feels icky, right? So even if you feel a little uncomfortable because they said something like they're not confident with their credit or whatever, it's your job to relay all of that information in a very concise way to your partner, okay? And then you just pass it off to the lender. Now, the four pieces of data that Carl mentioned, we're just going to go through each one. So I ask they always do the qualification price first. Why? They might increase their comfort zone. Yes? How often is the client's expectation of what they want and what they're willing to pay in 100% alignment? Like never. Never. And so I'm not a person who believes you want to push them outside of their comfort zone. I just want to be able to be realistic and a reflection of what is possible. So if they tell me, I want a four bathroom house with a huge backyard walking distance to the Whole Foods, and I want to pay $5,000 a month, we all know that's not realistic, right? So the first thing we have to know is, well, how high can they go? And when we're doing that reality check and we're studying the data, is it possible that they're going to want to pay what they would need to pay to get exactly what they want? If it's not possible, the needs analysis is going to be even more important so that you can adjust their expectations, right? And then the qualification payment. The comfort zone payment, the lender's already going to know because you're the one telling them that. And then they're going to tell you, hey, based on this comfort zone payment, here's the price. You guys following me here?
And more than 50% of the time when we give them their, these payment numbers, they never ask about the interest rate. So people right now are focused on how rates are high. Then more than 50% of the time, they don't even ask what the interest rate was when we ran these numbers for them.
Because they're focused on, and you don't want them focused on the interest rate. Okay. Funny story. My father-in-law, this is almost funny, but it's not. He's on the phone with Dan and he's like we're trying to get them to not have to sell their home to buy the next home. Right? So they're going to get a VA 100% loan, which they will only have to pay until their house sells, which means that they're probably not going to have to pay it for very long. Right? So in the scheme of things, it's really not that big of a deal. He's like, but I can't. Why? The interest rates. What? Well, I'm sorry. I don't think I understand. This is how they think, right? So it's our job to educate them, to help them feel more comfortable. And part of what they just need to know is the net impact on their circumstance, on their life, right?
I don't remember what I was going to say here. Besides that, it's your responsibility. Do you have anything to add about your responsibility?
I guess to piggyback off of what we were talking about, how if you guys are, it's your responsibility to gather that data so we can be quick, right? The need for that is not just so that way we can hop off the call quickly, but the scenarios we're going through are for your perfect buyers. Not everybody's perfect. There's going to be some challenges sometimes. So I would say probably 30 to 40% of the time on these calls, we're uncovering those challenges. Sometimes they're not going to tell you that they're self-employed or that they became 1099 6 months ago, or they didn't open up to you about how they think their credit's low. Everyone has a different definition of low when they're talking about credit. So it's our job as the lender to come in and give them confidence to take the next step so we can put together a plan for them. If they can't get approved right now, get them approved later. And then most importantly, reaffirm their decision that they made the right choice hiring you as their agent. You know, so at the end of the call, before I hop off and, you know, provide them, you know, information on how to next steps to move forward with the pre-approval, I'm going to say, hey, Mr. Jones, it's so great that you connected with Carrie. Carrie's the best agent on our team. Not to hurt anybody's feelings, but whoever I'm on the phone with, they're the best agent on our team. So I reaffirm that he chose the best agent on our team. So that way, you know, the likelihood of them having any doubts of signing the buyer agreement potentially go away. It works both ways. When you guys bring me in as a trusted partner, you saying that you trust me goes a lot farther than me saying, oh, I'm the best lender in the world. You know, when they hear it from a third party, they're more likely going to have more confidence.
Absolutely. Okay. So when writing the contract, this is a big one. I think that often when we're writing contracts right now, how many of you guys feel like you're competing again? We've had a couple of really competitive situations. Alisa, are you back there? She's on a consult. Okay. Alisa had one the other day where she was competing. I thought it was 20 offers. It was 25 offers. 25. So and Caitlin, who is a new agent to our team, but was my sales partner when we sold new construction, she had one the other day. My presentation this afternoon is actually based on her situation. The client had to go 10,000 above. Anyone been in that situation where you built rapport with the other agent and you know what your client needs to do to win and your client's like this? Oh God, no, I can't do that. Right? So it's going to be about the conversations and how to use data to bridge the gap when you're in that scenario. But part of it is using your lender partner, because if you've already brought them in, they can help the client to understand the impact of a change. They can be an advocate for helping you get the client comfortable. Okay.
And setting expectations. So that way, if for some reason they don't win, they're not disappointed. We had an agent on the team. They got ratified this weekend, but in the initial conversations, it was like they didn't have enough money to waive the appraisal contingency. And so I helped them set expectations with the client. Like, hey, this is the offer that's being put together because it's your highest and best. But, you know, if somebody else comes in without an appraisal contingency, even if they have a lower price to offer, the seller may go with that offer because it's less exposure to them because we're making an offer that's higher than what the house was listed for. And also, I thought it was, you know, I appreciated the trust when she came to me and she's asking me some questions that, you know, normally things that people on Carrie's team, you know, help coach on. And I was like, what did one of the other agents in the office say? Like one of our senior agents. And she's like, oh, he told me to come to you. So like, you know, I'm happy to handle that stuff because I know the answers, but you know.
That's part of how we have the process set up, right? Because how many of you guys have team members? Okay. Anyone ever feel like their team members ask them a lot of questions? Sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, right? And so part of our goal is to create different avenues for the team members to get the answers they need so they can get offers on paper quickly, right? So Carl and his team are a resource. Now, what about the conversation with the listing agent?
Yeah, show of hands. How many of you know that your trusted lender calls the listing agent when you submit your offer? Great. Okay. How many of those that just raised your hand know what your lender is saying on that conversation? Good. That's more than I expected. Yeah. So it's not Anybody can get on the phone with the listing agent and say, oh yeah, they're super qualified. They could buy a way more expensive house than this. You know, there's other key points that are important for your lender to share with the listing agent, depending upon the offer. Like if you're making an offer higher than what the house is listed for, it's going to provide value and confidence to the listing agent that about the appraisal panel and how their appraisals work at their lending company. You know, when we have, like, we devised our own appraisal panel, which means everybody that was difficult to work with, we fired them. The only people that are on our panel at this point are people that are easy to work with. And if there's additional information about that property that sets it apart from other comparables in the neighborhood, we want to provide that to the appraiser up front to make it easier for them to do their job and more likely to get as close to the value as possible. Obviously, we can't ask them to give us the purchase price that we're under contract for, but the easier we make their job, the easier they'll make our job, right? So that's a part of the conversation. But then at the end of the phone call, I ask them, hey, what feedback can I provide the buyer's agent? Because chances are they're not going to immediately hang up from my call and call you back. They're going to talk to other lenders and talk to their client. There's going to be delays. And most of the time, they're going to tell me what the difference maker is, what revisions need to be made for us to ratify. Do we need a larger EMD? Do we need to move the closing date up a little bit? You're like, where are we lacking compared to the other offers? And that's a huge difference maker.
And Caitlin's deal we just got done was not the highest price, but after Carl's feedback, she increased the EMD and that's how they won. So sometimes that little insight, the timing of that insight, when the agent is about to go meet with the seller, what does the agent do? Quickly check with the lenders to make sure that they're giving the seller the right advice about which offer to accept, right? So you want to have someone in that conversation that helps you win. Okay. So to stay connected to Carl, you guys, by the way, cannot all use Carl. Sorry. That is not the goal of this presentation. But if you want to stay connected to him, or if you have questions about how to structure your relationship with your partner, we want all of you to be successful. So please feel free to stay connected with him. Thank you, Carl.
Yeah, happy to help however I can.
Thank you for tuning into this special edition of the HyperFast Show, featuring our amazing speakers from the 2024 HyperFast Agent Summit. If you got value out of this, please do us a favor, like it, share it, and leave us a review or a comment. We love the feedback. And if you want to get more coaching from Carrie Scholl and I, you can get that by partnering with us at eXp Realty. When you join us at eXp Realty, you don't just get all the amazing benefits that you get from being a part of the world's first and biggest cloud brokerage, right? Which we all know those benefits are low fees, low caps, revenue share, stock awards, the ability to expand anywhere, right? You get all of that. But when you partner with Carrie and I at eXp Realty, we become your coaches, we become your mentors, we become your partners in building both your real estate sales business and your residual passive income. All you need to do to learn more is pick up the phone and send me a text message at 703-638-4393. Again, if you are ready to learn more about partnering with multi-billion dollar agents, top sponsoring agents at eXp Realty, myself and wife and business partner Carrie Scholl, pick up your phone and text me at 703-638-4393. Thanks for tuning in.